Members, please indicate their presence by voting. We will stand at ease momentarily here until we have a quorum. Lead us in the pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent for every spread on the journal.
Without objection, so ordered. Is there a journal to be certified?
As Chief Clerk, I certify as to the correctness of the journal for the 121st day of the regular session and the first supplement dated June 22nd, 1990.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Speaker, I move that the journal for the 121st day and the first supplement dated June 22nd, 1990 be approved as certified.
Is there objection? Is there objection? Hearing no objection, so ordered. Are there guests to be introduced this morning? Are there messages from the governor?
Dear Mr. Speaker, pursuant to my authority under Article 2, Section 4 of the Alaska Constitution, I am pleased to announce that I have appointed Judy Salo to fill a vacancy in the Office of Representative for House District 5 in the Alaska House of Representatives. Ms. Salo will hold this appointment until a successful candidate for the Office of Representative is elected and sworn into office to represent House District 5. Signed sincerely, Steve Cooper, Governor.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Speaker, I move that Judy Salo be confirmed as a member of the House of Representatives to fill the seat vacated by Representative Swackhammer, and I'll call the House on the motion.
We will have a roll call vote, although Title 15, Section 4330 allows that only the majority of the majority party, in this case, be required to vote, and that a majority of the majority party, in this case, vote in the affirmative. But again, we'll ask it if there is a move for unanimous consent and without objection.
I'll lift the call, Mr. Speaker.
The call's been lifted. Unanimous consent has been asked for. Is there objection? Is there objection? Hearing no objection, Representative Salo has been confirmed unanimously. Would Representative Navarro and Representative Taylor please escort the new representative to the chamber? get to do this often enough to get good at it, so... My apologies, Judy. Does the clerk have additional messages from the governor?
Mr. Speaker, the governor has requested that he speak in joint session at 11:30 today. I have no further communication.
Are there messages from the other house? I hope not.
I have none, Mr. Speaker.
Are there other communications?
We've received one disclosure letter that will be in the supplement, and we've received the following letters transmitted on House Joint Resolutions from the General Assembly of Virginia, May 24, 1990, and from the General Assembly of the Ohio House of Representatives, June 7, 1990, and copies have been given to each member. I have no further communications, Mr. Speaker.
I assume we can skip the reports of standing committees and special committees and go to introduction of citations and resolutions.
House Joint Resolution number 97 by the Rules Committee by request of the governor with a governor's letter and a fiscal note. Proposing amendments to the Constitution of the State of Alaska relating to subsistence uses of fish and wildlife by rural residents in order to retain management of those resources by the State of Alaska and providing for an effective date.
Resources Committee.
I have no further resolutions for introduction, Mr. Speaker.
Are there bills for introduction?
Yes, Mr. Speaker. Do you want to read them?
House Bill 599 by the Rules Committee by request of the Governor, an act relating to subsistence uses and fish and wildlife of fish and wildlife and creating the Subsistence Review Commission and providing for an effective date with the Governor's letter and a fiscal note.
Be referred to the Resources Committee.
House Bill 600 by Representative Phillips, an act relating to subsistence hunting and fishing and providing for an effective date.
Resources Committee.
House Bill 601 by Representative C. Davis, an act relating to subsistence, hunting, and fishing.
Resources Committee.
There are no further bills to be introduced.
Stand at ease for a moment, please.
How's it going, Mike?
House, please come back to order. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. There's a schedule that's been duplicated and passed out on all members' desks. Beginning at 11:15, we're going to reconvene, and joint session will start at 11:30 from noon to shortly after noon. The Governor and Senator Stevens will be in the Governor's Conference Room. At 1 o'clock, the Senate is convening down in the Centennial Hall, and all members are invited and welcome to attend that. And at 3:30, the House Resources Committee, which is the committee referral for the issue, will meet in the House Finance Committee room, and all members are encouraged to attend and participate. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Are there other announcements, Mr. Taylor?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Speaker. There'll be a minority caucus across the street in the court building immediately following our recess here. We'll be discussing two topics. The first, of course, is the issues before the body on subsistence. The second is the current state of the budget in light of the decline in oil prices and the fact that we may very well be running into a major deficit spending problem in this state, and we will be prepared, hopefully following that that conference, to report back to you, at least as to our position as to whether or not this special session should be expanded to take up consideration of this budget and this major problem that we may be facing. That's what we'll be talking about across the street. Thank you.
Under announcements, Mr. Martin.
On the reconsideration side...
No, we're under announcements, Mr. Martin. We're under announcements right now.
Approval of the journal, I'm going to bring up reconsideration for it.
You're moving to reconsider the motion to approve the journal.
Yes, sir.
All right, Mr. Majority Leader.
Speaker, I move that the House stand in recess until 11:15.
All right, we're in recess until 11:15. Will the chambers please come to order?
Mike. Judy's going to bring Cooper in.
In accordance with the uniform rules, the President of the Senate will preside over a joint session of the legislature. Mr. President.
Joint session will come to order. The purpose of this joint session is to hear addresses by Governor Cooper and United States Senator Stevens. Senator Rohde?
Mr. President, I move the affidavit's consent. The roll call of the Senate be waived, that all members be shown as present.
Without objection, Representative Lavar.
Mr. President, I move that the roll call of the House be waived and all members be shown as present.
Without objection. Will Representative Salo and Senator Sturgalewski escort the Honorable Steve Cooper, Governor of the State of Alaska, and the Honorable United States Senator Ted Stevens to the floor, please? That's the governor. Sounded good to me. Churchill is mad at the governor and praying around.
All rise. The Honorable Steve Cooper, Governor of the State of Alaska. The Honorable Ted Stevens, United States Senator.
It is my pleasure to introduce the Honorable Steve Cooper, Governor of the State of Alaska, and the Honorable Ted Stevens, United States Senator.
Thank you. President Kelly, Speaker Cotton, members of the Alaska State Legislature, nearly 35 years ago in Fairbanks, a small but distinguished group of Alaskans gathered to write a constitution. A solid frame that would support Alaska standing alone, independent from the federal government that had run this territory as a private preserve for Washington bureaucrats and the Seattle salmon packers for five consecutive decades. The document they produced was unique and remarkable for many reasons, but the most innovative and perceptive creation in that charter was the article setting a firm policy for the conservation and use of Alaska's natural resources. They were not dealing simply with oil or coal or minerals or trees. They made direct reference to stocks of wild fish and game for the use of the people, because they knew that Alaska was the last place in America where people truly depended on wild fish and game. More importantly, they knew that the people who conducted what we now call subsistence activities were not part of some dying backwoods culture or some display of local color calculated to appeal to the romantic fantasies of tourists. Subsistence was then and is now a living, changing, active economic and social system in Alaska. The people of Alaska have affirmed the support of that system again and again over the past 15 years. Every governor has supported it. Every legislature presented with the question has supported subsistence. In a statewide vote in 1982, almost 60% of Alaskans said that subsistence was a vital part of our state's heritage. This subject, subsistence hunting and fishing, is about how some Alaskans feed their families and about how most Alaskans think of our society. In no other place in America can people choose to live in a way that is fundamentally much the same as the lives of the pioneers in this country and of the Aboriginal people before them. It is a way of life that is forever lost in the rest of America. It distinguishes Alaskan life by providing a dimension to our experience that is unknown to New Yorkers and Californians. There was a time in Alaska when all our citizens could depend primarily on wild resources. For many years, at least by any definition common to Americans, all Alaska was rural in character. Our major cities consisted of a few thousand people living around the edges of a great wilderness. But times have changed in Alaska, especially over the last 20 years. Today, the economic characteristics of our major population centers are similar in many ways to cities elsewhere. Anchorage, Fairbanks, and Juneau are no longer big villages. They're cities with a typically urban economic base. People move to urban Alaska for economic opportunity. Alaska's international trade figures are the highest in America when expressed as a percentage of total cash transactions. We are no longer a remote and isolated outpost, but active participants in a dynamic global economy. The resulting pressure on fish and wildlife has compelled us to make some distinctions among Alaskans which were not necessary before. 12 years ago, at the height of the pipeline boom, the Alaska legislature decided that when there was not enough to go around, subsistence users would get a preference. In 1980, the United States Congress passed an act called the Alaska National Interest Lands and Conservation Act, later shortened to ANILCA. That act classified much of the federal land in Alaska, some 60% of our state's acreage, and it also required a subsistence preference for rural Alaskans on most of that land. In order to assure the rural subsistence preference on federal lands, ANILCA provided for federal fish and wildlife management there. But the act also provided that if the state passes a subsistence law of general application, which is consistent with the ANILCA provisions calling for rural subsistence, then the state of Alaska may retain full fish and wildlife management powers. In response to ANILCA, the Joint Boards of Fish and Game provided for rural subsistence by regulation. In 1982, there was a citizens' initiative to repeal the subsistence preference, which by then was available only to rural residents. In November of 1982, almost 60% of Alaska voted in favor of subsistence. After the 1982 vote, most Alaskans assumed the subsistence issue was settled. But political peace does not seem to last very long in Alaska. In 1986, an Alaska Supreme Court case led to the adoption of a rural subsistence preference by statute instead of by regulation. Once again, a sense of relief pervaded the ranks of subsistence advocates, and once again, peace was an illusion. In mid-1989, in what became known as the Kenaitse decision, a group of learned federal judges from San Francisco ruled that Alaska's 1986 Act was not consistent with ANILCA. Even though our Alaskan subsistence law was clearly consistent with the intent of Congress, that didn't matter. They knew what rural was, and that was that. Rural meant farms and cows. Their proposed definition of rural would have excluded Bethel, Barrow, Kotzebue, and Dillingham residents from the subsistence harvest, and included the 50,000 Fairbanks residents who live outside the city limits. A federal takeover to assure this absurd result would be forthcoming. As this administration was attempting to address the fallout of the Kenaitse case in Washington, the Alaska Supreme Court on December 22, 1989, decided that the Alaska Constitution did not allow a rural subsistence preference at all, even though one is clearly required under federal law if the state is to retain fish and wildlife management authority. In the wake of the so-called McDowell decision, those of us who have been in the subsistence trenches for many years first concluded that rural subsistence preference was sound policy for the reasons that I mentioned earlier, and because it allowed for unified state fish and wildlife management. We also concluded that the only way to get there from here was for the people of Alaska to pass an amendment to the state constitution in November, which expressly authorizes the rural subsistence preference that is clearly supported by the majority of Alaskans. For an assortment of reasons that do not need to be detailed here, the amendment did not receive the necessary two-thirds vote of each legislative body required to place it before the voters in November. That's why we're here today. I have introduced a package of legislation for your consideration in this special session, which will resolve the untenable position in which we are placed as a result of the Supreme Court's McDowell decision. The most important component of this proposal is a resolution calling for a constitutional amendment to be placed before the voters this November. If adopted by the Alaskan people, this amendment would authorize the legislature to provide for a subsistence preference for rural residents. The amendment would also retroactively validate the existing subsistence laws until such time as the legislature sees fit to change them. In order to address the ambivalence that some citizens feel about making a constitutional distinction between rural and urban residents, I have also included a provision that provides for a second vote on the constitutional amendment in 1994. If the amendment passes in 1990, and if by 1994 the majority of Alaskans believe that the constitutional approach was a mistake, they may vote to repeal the amendment. While I do not share the ambivalence that led to this new proposal, I recognize that the language renders the resolution acceptable to some who otherwise would not support it. It is important to recognize that you, the legislature, cannot pass a constitutional amendment. All you can do is authorize the people of Alaska to pass a constitutional amendment. It is the people who have the authority. The legislature's role is limited to allowing them to exercise that authority. I urge you to let the people vote. Along with the resolution, I am submitting to you legislation which would establish a subsistence review commission to review all aspects of state and federal laws relating to subsistence uses of fish and wildlife and the implementation of those laws. It would be made up of 9 members, including members from the Board of Fisheries or Board of Game, from the regional council system, from organizations representing Alaska natives, sportsmen, and commercial fishing interests, and 4 public members. Between now and the second vote of the people in 1994, the Subsistence Review Commission would provide a forum to bring together all segments of the Alaska population to consider this issue and to make recommendations to the governor and to the legislature regarding any necessary changes to state or federal law. Section 5 of the bill repeals and reenacts the current statutory definition of rural area. To authorize the Board of Fisheries and the Board of Game jointly to define that term in administrative regulation. This addresses the problems caused by the Kenaitse case, which I mentioned earlier. By authorizing the joint boards to define rural area in administrative regulation, the state will have the necessary flexibility to adopt a definition that is consistent with ANILCA and thereby retain state management of fish and wildlife on all land in Alaska. If adopted, these proposals will allow us to return to a fish and wildlife management and allocation regime which has, on the whole, served Alaskans well. If the proposals are rejected, we are certain to see the chaos of fragmented management with the attendant risks that major decisions about our fish and wildlife will reflect pressure groups that patrol the halls of Congress in Washington, D.C. Go to an animal rights meeting on the East Coast and see if you identify with the views expressed there. listen to a gathering of West Coast salmon harvesters and processors, and judge whether they are ever likely to represent your interests. There are sound reasons, based on our history as a territory and as a state, for us to do whatever is necessary to maintain the opportunity for rural Alaskan residents to live off the land and to keep the power to manage our fish and wildlife for ourselves. Our resources will be better for it, our people will be better for it, and the world will be better for it. Thank you for your attention, and I look forward to working with you in this special session.
President, Mr. Speaker, and members of the Alaska Legislature, I appreciate the opportunity to join Governor Cooper, and I am here at the specific request of Governor Cooper. As I came into this hall that I served in before this morning, I thought of another occasion. It's not very similar to this, but I'll tell you a little war story. It is an actual story. On Easter morning in 1945, I was leading a flight of unarmed transports across the Japanese lines in China. We were flying over the overcast, and we had nine planes to deliver material to the Chinese who were on the other side of those lines. Strangely enough, just as we crossed in the area of the most concentrated portion of the Japanese forces, the clouds disappeared, and there we were over these forces. One of my people broke radio silence and said to me, "Is this trip really necessary?" Now, that's what I said to myself as I was out here in your anteroom. And I've got to tell you, I've decided still it was as necessary as that flight. We are tampering with the very basis of statehood. No question about it. If this were 1960, Bob Bartlett would be here. I am here because I think we must share the concept of doing right for this state without regard to politics. And I hope that you all will follow that concept. For decades, Alaskans have sought to control the management of our natural resources, particularly fish and wildlife, whether on federal, state, or private lands or waters. Many efforts have been made by outsiders to take management away from us. In 1978, during the Alaska Lands Debate, the House of Representatives actually passed a bill that would have stripped Alaska of federal fish and wildlife management authority on federal lands. That bill did not pass the Senate. Governor Jay Hammond and I, in consultation with Representative Don Young and the Alaska legislature at that time, forged a bipartisan alliance with the late Senator Scoop Jackson and Senator Mark Hatfield to defend Alaska's total rights as a state. Earlier in 1978, this legislature had passed a law providing for a rural subsistence priority. Under the ultimate legislative compromise, which Senator Hatfield devised, Alaska retains fish and wildlife management authority so long as it maintains that priority. That compromise was a victory, not a defeat, for the supporters of state management authority. Although I agree with Justice Rabinowitz's dissents in the McDowell case, I'm not critical of the decision of the majority. The Alaska Supreme Court is obliged to interpret and defend our Constitution as it's amended by our people. The results, however, of the McDowell case, federal takeover and radical restructuring of the state subsistence law, in my opinion, are catastrophic. In Washington state, the Bolt decision on Indian treaty fishing rights turned the federal district court into the ultimate manager of the affected fisheries. The federal court there calls all the shots on salmon fishing in the Columbia River, on Puget Sound, and out to the 200-mile limit. The McDowell case could lead to the same result here in Alaska. Federal and state courts parceling out access to fish and wildlife to rural residents. The courts will not abandon rural residents, and remember that more than 50% of rural Alaskans are non-native. Litigation, not science and public comment, will manage our fish and wildlife resources if our Constitution is not amended. As a former solicitor of the Interior Department, I believe Secretary Lujan's letter to Governor Cooper is the toughest I've seen. When he says he may be forced to close federal lands to non-subsistence hunting or fishing, or extend the federal takeover to state lands, he's stating a fact. Manuel Lujan, a Westerner from New Mexico, in my judgment, is a good friend of Alaska. I believe he'll do his best not to trample on Alaska's prerogatives, but he's obligated to comply with federal law as it is interpreted by the courts, as are we. What lies ahead for Alaska under federal takeover? The proposed federal subsistence regulations, in my judgment, are bad for Alaska, and they will inevitably get worse, and not only because of litigation. Anti-hunting groups are a strong force in Washington, D.C., as the governor said. They will continuously lobby federal agencies to reduce hunting opportunities in Alaska. The recent hearings in Fairbanks, where Alaskans showed up to testify on the subsistence regulations, only to find that the federal official in charge hadn't even read them, is just one good example of what life under federal takeover, will be like. And if you have any doubts, ask the people of Anaktuvik Pass what it's like to have federal officials spying on you by remote cameras on mountaintops just to make sure you don't violate federal rules. It actually happened. All Alaskans, rural and urban, subsistence hunters and non-subsistence hunters, native and non-native, are going to suffer. As a lifetime member in the National Rifle Association and the only senator ever to serve on its national board, I am particularly concerned about the split developing now between rural and urban hunters. Urban NRA members should realize that promoting such a split will only benefit the opponents of hunting and of Alaska's management authority. Whatever the merits of a legal challenge to the federal subsistence priority in federal court, and I have no problem with that, and vigorously pursuing such a challenge in federal courts, courts cannot act and will not act quickly enough to prevent the management chaos we face now. And even then, the federal courts cannot restore the validity of state law. Senator Murkowski, Congressman Young, and I are convinced that taking this subsistence issue back to Congress while a federal takeover is in place will be disastrous for Alaska. Our opponents of ANWR, Tongass, wetlands, and numerous other issues may negotiate a return of state managed authority to Alaska. But the price will be too great. Just as importantly, battles we won during the Alaska lands debate on traditional land access, inholders' rights, state land selections, and other issues are going to be reopened. The only realistic way to preserve Alaska's management authority, in my judgment, is to amend the Constitution to authorize the state rural subsistence priority. And I'm here for the purpose of supporting the governor's position on that matter. I also support establishment of a commission to examine the long-term future of the subsistence priority in Alaska. Furthermore, if an amendment is approved here for submission to the people to restore the Alaska subsistence program, I will pursue general legislation in the Congress to provide that the term rural and other terms not specifically defined in federal laws that affect state fish and game management will be defined in accordance with the laws of the affected state. The outcome of the subsistence crisis, in my judgment, will shape Alaska's future for years to come. Our Constitution states that all political power is inherent in the people. And I believe the people of Alaska deserve a chance to vote on a subsistence amendment. They should choose the future for Alaska, not us. This is really your role. If a subsistence amendment is voted down, let me tell you, our enemies in Washington will conclude that a new generation of Alaskans, less concerned with the rights of Alaska as a state, is now in control. We can expect further attacks on sovereignty. They would be encouraged by such an action on the part of Alaskans. On the other hand, if the subsistence amendment is approved, the determination of Alaskans to work out our problems at home in Alaska will be reaffirmed. Our opponents will see that we will not allow them to exploit our differences. During the Senate debate on the Alaska Lands Bill in 1979, we faced an amendment that would have repudiated valid land selections that had already been made by Alaska and approved under the Statehood Act. And we were able to force the withdrawal of that amendment at that time. But that was only the case because Alaska was united behind consensus points developed by the governor's Blue Ribbon Panel. Those consensus points also called, let me remind you, for preservation of state management authority on federal lands. That was the number one goal of the governor's Blue Ribbon Panel. Now, we need to seek that consensus again today, and I urge you to take the action that will restore it. I urge you to, whether or not you support the rural subsistence preference on its merits, and let me again state that, whether you personally do support this subsistence preference or not, give Alaskans the chance to determine the future course of our state. What will be the course of our state over the next decade? In my judgment, your job and mine is to put our trust in the good judgment of the people who elected us. That can only happen if you approve the submission of this constitutional amendment to the people of Alaska. I hope you'll do that, and I look forward to working with you if you do. Thank you very much.
Objection, joint session stands adjourned.
The House will stand at ease. We're not going to adjourn. Go back to order. Are there announcements to be made before we adjourn? Mr. Menard.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would ask that we waive the 24-hour notice on Rule 23 in regards to committee actions on the subsistence and subsistence bills that we had before Resources, starting today at 3:30, the Resources Committee and House Finance.
Is there objection to the motion?
No objection.
Is there objection? Hearing no objection, the motion has been adopted unanimously. Other announcements, Mr. Navarre? Majority Leader.
9:30 a.m. in the Speaker's chambers.
Other announcements?
We did bring some olives this time, and we will have a meeting of Minority Caucus tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock to discuss subsistence. Thank you.
Is that an open caucus?
Yeah.
Ours was open this morning. Yours was closed. Mr. Majority Leader.
I move that the House stand in adjournment until 10 a.m. tomorrow.
We're adjourned until 10 a.m. tomorrow.